As I saw the children this morning in the first service, because there weren't any children here, Austin asked us to imagine ourselves as children. And I was remembering, and some of you will not have any idea what I'm talking about, laying on the floor in front of our black and white television with rabbit ears, and they did not belong to an animal, but they were called rabbit ears, and trying to tune in the old Superman program that began Truth, Justice, and the American Way. Our founding documents that established this nation claim truths. We are told that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We claim those as being a truth, yet we've spent in excess of 200 years arguing who gets to have those truths and those rights. Are they just for men, or are they for women? Are they for citizens? Are they for people passing through our borders? Are they just for straight people? Are they people of alternate gender expression? Who gets these rights? Because they're truths and they're universal. We can't quite decide who gets them, though. In trying to find a definition for truth, it actually becomes rather elusive. You would imagine that defining truth would be fairly easy. Yet when you try to grasp a solid definition for truth, it's like trying to grasp smoke in your hand, and you think you've captured it, and you open your hand, and it's gone. So what then is truth? What is our truth? What is my truth? What is the truth of other people? Truth is shaped by our experiences, by our intellect, by our interaction with other human beings. Many times people are threatened by our truth. I found this to be true recently, well, February, fairly recently, when I was standing outside of the federal court on Granby Street in Norfolk, Virginia, and we were waiting for Judge Wright Allen to hear the marriage equality case. We were on consigned to one side of Granby Street by the Norfolk City Police, who had a line down the middle of Granby Street separating us. On my side of Granby Street were about 17 of us who were in favor of marriage equality, and we were there to demonstrate our support. On the opposite side of Granby Street, separated by the Norfolk City Police, were about 300 people who did not support marriage equality. And the police told both sides, no crossing the street. Everybody stay on your side of the street. We don't want any conflict. We were very happy with that. We did not want 300 people confronting us. Unfortunately, truth be told, as the day went on, the Norfolk City Police were called to other obligations. And when the last officer got in his car and drove away, a wave of 300 people descended on us. And they weren't particularly interested in hearing about our truth. They wanted to tell us their truth, but they did not want to hear what our truth was. During my theological education experience, and I know that Reverend Jennifer here experienced a similar educational undertaking, because even the UU requires what's called clinical pastoral education for people in formation to be a minister. You are placed inside a clinic or other medical facility where you get the experience of learning what it's like to and what it means to be a hospital chaplain. And it's part academic and part theological, and it's anywhere from 6 months to a year program. And I made the mistake in my theological education of putting it off to the end. I didn't want to do both that and academic classroom work at the same time. And I thought, well, I will just wait until my final year, and I will do that exclusively, and I will have completed all my classroom work. And 9 months out from the start of the school year, I started applying to hospitals in the Boston metropolitan area, only to quickly discover at 9 months out there weren't any openings. Everybody's program was completely filled. And I started imagining, okay, a train ride 1 hour from Boston. What hospitals can I apply to then? After a while, I was finally at 3 hours outside by train trying to find a hospital that would take me. And all of them told me, you should have started applying a year ago. I didn't know they were that competitive. I was becoming very frightened because this was my last year. I was supposed to graduate and be ordained, and yet I needed this both for my education and for my ordination. So in desperation, I sent out a list of emails to every hospital I could think of that had a program begging, does anyone have a spot? Can anyone recommend anything? And a few days later, I got a response back from New England Baptist Hospital. I was immediately advised by my academic advisor at Divinity School, take a year off and then come back and do it, but don't go to that hospital. And I said, I can't afford to take a year off. That's not possible. So they sent me another email and said, we have one opening, two applicants. Can you be here in 1 hour for an interview? I immediately put on a suit. I jumped on the subway, and I was at New England Baptist Hospital that quick for an interview. I imagined it to be an interview of being asked my academic qualifications, theological questions. Instead, it was a one-hour interview of me trying to justify how I can be both openly gay and claim to be a Christian. And that's when I found out why my academic advisor told me, take a year off and don't go to that hospital. I was quickly to discover that for many people at the hospital, and it's actually a very good medical facility, but the one important aspect of their name, New England Baptist Hospital, for a lot of people there is the word Baptist as opposed to hospital. When the program started, I was told without any reservation that the two individuals, myself and one other person, were under consideration. The other person was a person from Harvard Divinity School, but he happened to be Buddhist. And they told me, in not mincing any words, how on earth could we have a Buddhist chaplain? What could they offer anyone? What could they tell anyone? So their choice was left with, okay, do we take the gay Christian or the Buddhist? So I was the lesser of the two. So I still to this day don't know what happened to the poor fellow from Harvard Divinity School. I really hope that he got a spot somewhere, but I was so desperate when they offered it to me, I jumped at the chance. So. But I was quickly to discover their truths and mine were very different. And I found that out after the first few days I was there, and as I went to pick up my patient list each morning as we were assigned our rounds to visit patients, the other people in the program had patients who listed their faith as being Christian. I had patients who listed their faith as agnostic, atheist, Hindu, Buddhist. And for the first time in my experience, a term which may be familiar to many of you, I hadn't encountered until that time, people who describe themselves as humanist and spiritual. So all of this was a little out of my depth. I was hoping to expand my theological boundaries. I was hoping to expand and gain knowledge of other people's faith traditions. I wasn't expecting to do it in quite this way. We were told in the academic portion of the program that we were there to practice what's called a ministry of presence. We were not there to proselytize. I took that to heart. Others in the program did not. And a few people did take the opportunity to attempt to proselytize some of the patients into their particular faith. I took it to heart because when I went into the people's rooms and they listed faiths that I was unfamiliar with or no faith at all, I spent a great deal of time doing things like just sitting and talking about the weather, which is a common thing to discuss when you live in Boston or New England. I also spent a great deal of time reading the sports pages to people. The biggest problem with that for me was I readily admit, if you want to talk about sports, I am the wrong person to engage. If you want to talk about the latest episode of Project Runway, then come and see me. If you want to talk about sports, you have picked the wrong person because you're going to have a very one-sided conversation. And as I was reading the sports page, I would be more interested in, oh, look, Macy's is having a sale than what the... Nonetheless, I felt if that's what best enlivens them and helps their experience at this hospital, then that's what I'm here to do. What happened in the process, though, as I began to consider, some of these individuals actually were seeking spiritual encouragement. And I wanted to do that for them, but I wasn't quite sure how. So I began to investigate these different aspects of different philosophies that people engaged and religious aspects that people engaged. And I searched Hindu prayers and Buddhist prayers and Jewish prayers and Muslim prayers. And in the process, what I had been told that my particular faith paradigm held a exclusivity on what constituted the truth, I wasn't so sure anymore. Because all of these other faiths held what Thich Nhat Hanh explains here, there was good and there was beauty and there was meaning in these other traditions. And so my experience in learning to be a hospital chaplain expanded my boundaries as what constituted the truth. And that has been for me, for the most part of my experience, the measuring rod I use to determine what is truth for me. As I become more mature, and I do choose to use the word mature as opposed to senior, although I do still appreciate when I go to the grocery store and the very young checkout people speak very loudly because they're quite sure I can't hear them and say, "Sir, we gave you your senior discount. Thank you. I will take the 15%. Nonetheless, as I mature, I hesitate to claim something approaching universal truths. And the reason I'm hesitant to do that is not because I discount the concept. It's because I have to take the time to examine anything that I take into my life and label truth, because I have to determine if I take this into myself and if I take this into my personal practice, is this going to be something that expands my boundary and welcomes more people? Or is it going to be something that closes boundaries and excludes more people? One of the things that becomes threatening to people when we discuss truths, our human beings are prone to do this. We construct identities for ourselves. Everyone constructs an identity for yourself. Many people do so based on certain philosophies or certain faiths or certain truths. So when those truths or philosophies are threatened, then people's identities are threatened. And when people's identities are threatened, people can become very disturbed, even to the point of violence, which is kind of what we experienced outside the courthouse on Granby Street in Norfolk. Part of what we do with truth, this past week, I was speaking to the League of Women Voters, first in Virginia Beach and then later in Norfolk. And when I was speaking to the League of Women Voters in Norfolk, somehow the conversation started to talk about media reporting and how certain media outlets claim to be reporting the truth and others don't. And you will turn on one station because their reporting buttresses your worldview and buttresses your identity, where another station may not, so you quickly turn that off in disgust and say, "I'm not listening to that. I don't want to hear what they have to say." So the test then comes, at least for me anyway, if we claim these truths, what are we doing with them? Are we using our truths to welcome people, or are we using them as a weapon to beat people over the head with? Because for me, if we're doing that with what we consider to be our truth, then is it really truth? Because do we want to harm someone by sticking to our truth and beating them over the head with it? Or do we want to try to engage them in authentic conversation? And do we want to try to take the effort to find what is good and what is beautiful and what is meaningful, even in a tradition that may not be familiar to us, with the hope that perhaps some segment of it, some spark, something may touch us and transform us. Part of the reason why I'm so grateful for the opportunity to speak in UU, to UU congregations is because you do that very well. Every church that I've been to, you do that very well. That's been my experience. You are welcoming, you are open, you are accepting. I wish others could learn from your experience, because there are oftentimes I get invitations to speak, and they're not really invitations to speak. They were what were described to you in the reading I read. They are more opportunities for the people who invite me to tell me their story and not listen to mine and then ask me to leave. So I have to be very careful about where I go and speak and who I speak with, because in my experience, it's not that I want to exclude people. It's not that I don't want to have dialogue with people. But if I'm being invited to a dialogue that isn't truly a dialogue, then why put myself through that experience? Are they inviting me to expand their boundaries and expand their horizons and perhaps learn from something I have to say? Or is it just an effort to tell me what they think and put me in my place? I share all this with you in the hopes that perhaps some of it may be meaningful to you and your community. Perhaps, as someone told me in the first service, that he too struggles with a definition of truth. He told me that he was a physicist, and from the time he began studying physics until now, what was taught to him originally as scientific truth has been altered and changed and adapted, and now is quite different than it was in the beginning. If you perhaps watched the series earlier this past year with Neil deGrasse Tyson, he touched on that a great deal as he spoke about how things that used to be considered scientific truth, as we discover more of the universe, become more open to us. So perhaps that's what we need to continue to try to do, both as individuals and faith communities. Perhaps the advice Thich Nhat Hanh offers, allow for what is good, allow for what is beautiful, and allow for what is meaningful in others' traditions. And perhaps these truths might help to transform us. Thank you.